Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
If you use it with the right heart, you can use the innovation process to really kind of bring people together. But if you do it without the heart and just say, hey, we just need ideas to improve the business and just, you know, submit your ideas and, you know, you'll get a gift card or something, it usually lands very flat and doesn't do a darn thing. Everybody has a role to play. This is not something that's going to be done behind closed doors where you don't know about it. It's going to occur as part of what our team does in a normal course of business.
So we are here with Gary Covert. Gary is an executive advisor and coach who helps senior leaders execute strategically, develop exceptional teams, and innovate effectively across a wide variety of industries, including energy, construction, technology, healthcare, senior care, restaurants, mining, and I bet some others that the biography does not mention. He's the author of the book Ridiculously Innovative, a graduate of the Thunderbird School of Global Management, and chair of the McKay CEO Forum. Gary, welcome.
Very happy to be with you, Michael.
Can you tell us more about your experience with innovation and why you've chosen to focus on innovation as part of your career?
The more I look at it, the one Achilles heel that I see with so many leaders is that as they go up and they expand their control, expand their responsibilities in an organization, they're expected to improve things. They're expected to do innovation, but many of them are unprepared for it. You know, it doesn't mean that they're not creative people. It doesn't mean that they don't see opportunities, but they just are lacking in a few different things that would help them to really raise the bar for their organization. Many leaders don't get fundamental, I guess, training or insight or development on those activities, on the innovation specifically. I think that's a real weak point.
I think there was a McKinsey study last year. It had 6% of executives saying that they were satisfied with innovation performance in their companies.
So it makes me think, and you mentioned one of my other books. Another book I wrote was called Untenable. I talk about like three different areas. You need to have the conviction to move, the discipline to move, and the aptitude to move. So three areas. If you lack conviction, then you will procrastinate. If you lack the discipline, that means you lack the inner resources. So you won't get around to it just because you don't have it within yourself. If you lack the aptitude, then you'll be overwhelmed. What I think is important is that in terms of innovation is that we have all three. We have to have the conviction, the aptitude, and the discipline to get started. We need to guard against insularity. We need to guard, make sure that we are getting enough new information into our senior leadership team within our teams to say, okay, these are real things we need to think about, not be dismissive of.
And should that information be coming from outside or actually in the company?
The attention should just be put on guarding against insularity, whether it's insulating the organization from its own ideas or from outside ideas. So what can often happen in an organization is insularity is driven by whoever has the biggest P&L, whoever's business operation is the makes the most money today, gets an outside political influence as to what things are addressed, what things are pursued, what opportunities are looked at. So I think it's important for every leader, you know, even if you're the one who runs the biggest business unit inside your company, to be aware that, okay, I may have a blind spot due to insularity. I need to get new thinking inside my into my team. And that can come from outside, but that could also be looking within the organization. There's always somebody. You always look around. I know this by talking to leaders. If you look if you look around enough, if you talk to people, if you've got good networks, there's always going to be somebody in there that's going to raise their hand up and say, hey, I've got a different way of thinking about this. You know, my boss or my boss's boss hasn't listened to it. They're kind of dismissive. But, you know, if they can get to the right person, you know, sometimes the whole idea may not, their idea, particular idea may not be the total solution, but it might be the germ or an insight that the senior leader needs to look at and say, okay, we really need to be taking a look at that opportunity. So, yeah, I would say exactly what you said is that those two areas are important. You need to look inside, but you also need to look outside. I think you need to look at both. But the key is, I think, making sure that we're not being too insular, you know, and just breathing our own exhaust is one way to say it. I think so. There's, I'm reading a book right now. It's on the building of the Panama Canal. It's by David McCullough. Fascinating, because that was built in the early 1900s, of course. And the technology that was required and the organization skills and all that was just tremendous. But one of the key people involved with it talked about how long it takes for ideas to become apparent. And he said, it takes about 10 years for an idea to the import of an idea to really kind of sink in with people. And I think, you know, some examples, like when I was in college, this is dating me a little bit. When I was in college, that was the first time I kind of saw the internet. I was in a library, which is where you kept the computers at that time. And I was looking at a screen. My buddy was looking at something and he had text on the screen and it had these little blue highlights on it. And I said, what's that? He says, oh, that's a hyperlink. I said, what's a hyperlink? And he says, well, you click on it, and you can go on the internet. I was like, oh, okay, well, I mean, that's interesting. I guess you can use that for, like, you know, research or finding out, you know, what's new and things like that. But after a while, me and, you know, millions of others, we started to figure out, it's like, wow, what can you really do with all this stuff? And the idea of the internet, and even before that, you know, germinated. It just takes time. So I think it's important for leaders to be able to see that the small things can turn into big things later.
So is it more the aptitude, you think, or is it more the discipline that's the harder thing for leaders to deal with around innovation?
Organizations are pretty good about discipline, kind of following through, because you get plans drawn, you get people focused on things. If you can get to that part, the discipline. Usually the aptitude is where things kind of fall apart, I think, because to really innovate and through the process of innovation requires a different process than what you use for problem solving. So problem solving is just getting back to a standard. Say, hey, you know, sales are off by 30%. How do we get them back? Or our quality just fell off. You know, we're having a lot more safety incidences. How do we get back to where we were? So that's problem solving. And that has many different ways to get there. You know, all sorts of organizations have problem solving methodologies, how to get to the root cause, you know, what went wrong and fix it. That's fine. But innovation is different because you're trying to get to a place you've never been before. You know, you're trying to raise the standard. You're trying to create something that hasn't existed before. So there's no baselines. What often happens is leaders will just start with, hey, let's go get some ideas and get them on the board and just do some brainstorming. And then let's just jump right into action immediately. And they skip some of the key intermediary steps. And these don't have to take an awful lot of time, but you need to at least touch on them. You need to at least be able to screen ideas in and screen ideas out. You need to be able to develop those ideas and you need to turn them into rigorous plans. And then you need to execute. But oftentimes it's just like, hey, let's get this idea and let's go. You know, and you know, and they skip all the intervening steps there.
I suppose a big problem is that, like you said, the processes that they're used to are almost the opposite of what you need to do for innovation. Like the close control, the well-monitored process, a lot of that stuff isn't going to help them come up with breakthrough new ideas.
So there's one kind of tool I've started to use with clients. I call it the Innovation 9 Box. So the people are familiar with talent 9 boxes. So you use a grid and you put the grid is basically a person's potential versus their performance. And I use the same kind of idea with the innovation idea. So as we go through and we get different ideas on the board, I have them map them out. So to what extent is this idea have big potential, you know, from high, from low, medium to high, and depending on the organization, it can, the scope of what is high is very different, but also ease of implementation. And you know, from low, medium to high, and I have them chart them out. And it's okay to have a lot of good ideas that are low value. That's okay. Little by little, we just start to improve the organization. Organizations are very easy to protect themselves from anything new, because most organizations, the reason why they work is because they're well managed. And when you institute something new, then what is managed today may not have to be managed anymore. And that makes people nervous. It's what? We're not going to be doing that product anymore, or we're going to scale that product down. It's like, I'm the manager of that product. So what do I do? So they get a little nervous. Or that kind of process, we're not going to do that process anymore. Oh, but what if? You know, what if? They get all scared about it. So innovation is really about leadership. It's about not just managing what's apparent today, but trying to get us to, you know, a higher and better future. So back to the 9 box. Once, if you look at that tool, then you can start to see, you know, what are the opportunities? Are we thinking too big and too pie in the sky? Or are we just thinking too small and working on those things that are just low hanging fruit? If it's all low hanging fruit, my first question would be, what is it about your organization that you didn't do this before? Why didn't you make these adjustments earlier? The other thing would be, you know, is it enough? Are we on a Blockbuster track? Are we on a Kodak track? Are we on an Amazon track? If you talk to any leader and say, hey, would you like to have a more innovative culture? Yes, you know, 100%. They'll say yes. Even if they have a very innovative culture, they're not satisfied. But when you start to ask them, it's like, where is innovation occurring in your company? They'll often feel like that there could be a little bit more on the edge, I think, which is really important. I would also say that we need to be thinking both wide, you know, within the organization as well as deep. So when I think about the edge, I think about like frontline employees and things like that. That's obviously where you're going to find some of the best ideas that and most practical ideas to shift, and insights that can really shift the organization. But I also think that really, you know, innovation at the edge is important, but we need to really think about innovation at the heart of things. And at the heart of it, it's going to be a leader. It's going to be a leader who is thinking innovatively, has a heart and courage to think innovatively, and creates an environment where everybody is kind of infected by that feeling, you know, where they feel like, hey, you know, I could be an innovator too. I was working with an executive team, and a great bunch of people, highly engaged. They all want to lift the performance of the organization. But one comment stuck with me, and it came from their senior HR leader. She said, you know, Gary, I had never thought that I have a role to play in innovation. And it just blew my mind, because I thought, I already assumed that she knew it. I already assumed that she felt that way. She just didn't see that. She thought, you know, I'm just the people person. I was like, what? Are you crazy? If you're the people person, you have to be involved with engagement. You have to be, and she knew that, but she didn't see herself in that role. And if a leader in that role isn't seeing herself as a potential innovator, who else might not? So I think it's so important to, before we even get to the edge, is get to the center and get people thinking about, and when I say center, I'm pointing at the center of my heart. I'm thinking about that people need to kind of feel it intrinsically and say, you know what? You know, you don't need to be an engineer to be creative. You don't need to have some great computer skills to be innovative. Innovation is applied creativity. You're a person, you have some creativity, you have some insight, and you can apply it. So if you can meet those two criteria, and I know you can, you all have potential to be an innovator. And innovation is a contact sport. Marshall Goldsmith talks about leadership as being a contact sport. I think innovation is a contact sport. The rare individual is that one that can just sit in a lab or an environment and just innovate by themselves. Most of the time, it doesn't work that way. It works by these happy coincidences and collisions and good positive energy and good discipline and people having deep experience or new experience that they share about what's going on in the market or technology. These kinds of things kind of making a happy little melting pot, you know, to get people together and these ideas kind of percolating. So, yeah, edge is important, but I also think it starts with the heart.
Most leaders, it seems, or a lot of them are lacking the innovation aptitude. We've kind of come to the conclusion, and it sounds like a lot of that is playing in the wrong sport, in a sense, right? And you say it's a contact sport.
Well, it's so interesting you bring up the sport metaphor. One of the leaders that I admire the most, he always talks about playing with the jersey, and what he means is playing with the front of the jersey. So that meaning the team. In American football, you write your name. Your name is typically written on the back of your jersey. And so many people in organizations play, and his observation is, are playing, you know, their own game. They're not playing a team game. And their own game might be, you know what, this is my particular business unit, my particular product. I'm just going to play to win with my team. Or I'm in the finance group, so I'm going to make sure the finance group looks great. And they lose track of the fact that we're all in one big team together. We're going to win together. We're going to lose together. And it really takes some managerial courage from the executive team to give some latitude within the organization to make sure that people get rewarded for the right things so that they're not solely rewarded for getting today's dollars, but they're also being rewarded for creating tomorrow's opportunities. And that may not come from optimizing their own little silo. There's a great little book called Collaboration by, I think it's Hansen. And great little book, but in there he talks about this concept of being T-shaped, you know, in terms of, you know, a company is great or a team is great or has great power by being siloed. We focus our attention. That's a long part of the letter T. But we also need to branch left and right and be able to have some interactions with other people to really leverage the power of collaboration. And I think the same can be said about innovation, that we need to be T-shaped in terms of innovation so that we need to get our job done. That's why we're siloed. That's why we're organized into the way that we are, so that we can get specific tasks done. But we also need to be looking left and right. You know, how can you and I, our teams, work together so that we can create something new, improve a process, or raise the bar in all sorts of different areas? Sometimes as organizations, we think too small about where we need to be innovating. And we can innovate on so many different areas. We can put this tool, this capability of innovation to fix so many different areas or improve so many different areas. And they can be in terms of, I've written on this as well, as diversity and inclusion. We can innovate in that area. We can innovate in terms of even law or finance or safety. It's not always just about products and process.
What do we even mean when we say innovation? Because innovation, on a certain level, the mindset shift is that anyone can innovate. isn't the basic business of most companies, especially today, to innovate? Isn't that the basic idea of what companies need to do?
Yeah, it's an obviousity, yes, but it's something that often doesn't get executed on. And I think the reason is just people get busy. Leaders get busy. Look at what leaders have been doing for the last 18 months. A lot of them have been busy fixing things. None of that is what you just described, which is staying at the leading edge of stuff, being attractive to new clients, creating new products, positioning ourselves in the marketplace. So I think that we really have a stark choice. The stark choice is to be dangerously innovative, so innovative that people, you know, really notice us and we stay top of mind with our clients and really delight them, or we can be dangerously irrelevant. So we need to be continuously challenging ourselves in a positive way. And we need to make sure that we don't make it a grind, but look at it as a growth opportunity and look at it as a positive expression for one another. When I do engagement surveys with clients, one of the number one things that pops up, you know, people talk about money and all that sort of stuff, remuneration. But one of the biggest things that comes up with people as far as an engagement driver is once challenge and once opinions valued. They don't want to be bored and they want people to recognize that they have valuable things to say.
So when you're talking about engaging your own workforce as a leader, how do you play both ends? In other words, how do you get innovation at the edge and at the heart at the same time?
It's kind of like a chicken and the egg, isn't it? You know, you need engagement in order to innovate. But like you've said earlier, innovation itself, I think, can become an engagement tool. So let's think about what engagement is. Engagement is the state at which people are willing to give their discretionary effort, you know, given a little bit above and beyond. So in a gym that I used to go to, it was on the second floor of a building, and I had this big bay of windows. As I'm working out, I can look into this area that does car detailing. So they clean up cars and vacuum cars, but it's in the backside of the lot where nobody sees it. And I would see this guy, and he would be on his phone while he's doing all this work. So he'd have his left hand up to his ear. At the same time, he's buffing the car and vacuuming the car, and he would be talking the whole time, and I'd be on like a piece of cardio equipment. I'd be watching. So it'd be like, you know, 30 or 40 minutes I'd see him, and he'd still be going when I left. This guy was only, he definitely didn't have his heart in his job, and he only had one hand. So he's getting the job done, basically, but he was definitely not engaged in his job. And to innovate, we need two hands and somebody's head in the game. They need to be in that state that they're willing to give their discretionary effort. And so much of it requires that we hit their engagement hot buttons. So everybody's a little bit different. Many people are engaged by wanting challenge, and they are engaged by wanting people to listen to them, but not everybody. Some people just want to come in and do their job. I think what we need to do is, number one, kind of reestablish the relationships that we have with our teams. Make sure that we are engaging them in ways that they want to be engaged with and addressing those needs that are important to them. I was working with a team where we kind of took them through this as a larger team, and we just took them through an innovation cycle. So we started off with doing a strategy session. What are the key activities that we want to accomplish here in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months? We get those kind of, you know, out there, and everybody's aligned. And then from there, then we can start an innovation sprint. And of course, we got great ideas to improve the business, and those were quantifiable. The leader was very happy with the, going back to that 9 box, you know, the quality of the ideas that we got, and how quick we could get them done. More opportunities for some big thinking, but, you know, happy with the results. But what he also mentioned, and I was waiting for it, he says, you know what, Gary, what else I saw was just how much people liked being engaged in the process. They many of them had not been asked before to be in part of this process or to be tapped as a, you know, like a challenge leader. The ancillary benefits is that he saw his team was more engaged. He saw that they were enthusiastic about what they were doing. They could see new opportunities for themselves, and they had closer connections with their team. So I think you can use it, if you use it with the right heart, you can use the innovation process to really kind of bring people together. But if you do it without the heart and just say, hey, we just need ideas to improve the business and just, you know, submit your ideas and, you know, you'll get a gift card or something, it usually lands very flat and doesn't do a darn thing. I remember one company I saw, and we were talking about this subject, and they said, oh, Gary, oh, yeah, we're hugely innovative. We do all sorts of the programs that you're talking about. I said, well, tell me about it. He said, well, you know, last year we ran a whole big program, and we got two great ideas. They got a handshake from the CEO, and they got, you know, accolades in the company newsletter and all that sort of stuff. I said, oh, that's great. What happened to those ideas? What do you mean? It's like, so you had this one idea, had a huge amount of potential. So, yep. And you had a second idea, a huge amount of potential. Yep. What'd you do with those ideas? The gist of it was, is that these ideas that they had highlighted so strongly to the organization were just that, kind of impractical, and they had really no interest in using them to improve the business. So they had a whole lot of activity, you know, to generate these ideas and get people involved in a contest and all this kind of stuff. And it just went nowhere. So now the organization is kind of jaded. They kind of think, okay, well, this was just innovation theater. This was nothing about really improving the business. You just kind of wanted to go through the motions. And that can be hugely damaging. So we need to make sure that we're doing this with the right heart. We're doing it with the right intention. We're using it for to improve the business in a real way. But we're also using it in a way that's, you know, supportive of people, that recognizes the talent of people and the unique genius that comes from people. I think if you do it the right way, hugely beneficial. If you do it the wrong way, it'll go flat.
To sum it all up, what would you say leaders should be thinking about if they really genuinely want their company to innovate? They're part of that, you know, large percentage that says that's important and they mean it. But they're also finding it's not working. What would be the tip?
Nobody gets good at anything right away. If you're going to, if you have a dream that you want to be a better runner, you just don't jump off the couch and go run a marathon. You start to build yourself up. And innovation, the process, is kind of like a muscle. You can start to show them a process that they need to follow and that the team's going to follow about going from ideation to screening ideas in to making a plan. And to execute, selection and then executing. And then the fact that everybody has a role to play. This is not something that's going to be done behind closed doors where you don't know about it. It's going to occur as part of what our team does in a normal course of business. It will give you a way to recognize and measure innovation on an individual basis. Many organizations have innovation as a core value, or they have it as a piece of an individual development plan or performance review cycle. And then they just have innovation, evaluate this employee based on how innovative they are. And that's usually one of the most subjective, fuzzy areas for evaluation. But if you actually do an innovation sprint, if you start to get into action, now you have real ways to evaluate people. To what extent were you collaborative? To what extent were you able to bring in new information to the organization? To what extent were you a great executor? You can start to point to those real behaviors that will indicate, hey, I've got an innovative culture. People love to be on winning teams. I mean, look at Google or some of these other places that people are just clamoring to work. The reason they want to work there is just because they're so darn innovative. And if you want to attract some of the very best and brightest, you get a reputation for being innovative too.
Cool. Well, thank you for taking the time to be with us. This has been Gary Covert, beaming in live from Arizona.
Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.